host Dr. Pat Baselli is blowing the doors off traditional talk radio. Get ready for powerful interviews.
Hey, good evening, everyone. It's Sandy Seashore. Welcome to Happy Hour. Thank you for joining me tonight. I'm coming to you live from San Diego, California, where we have all the fires put out. Yay! I have an interesting show tonight. I have comedian Elsa Cifuentes. She's coming on, and she's going to give us San Diego's latest traffic report. And John Hogue, you know who he is. He's the rogue scholar and world authority on Nostradamus. And we have Tommy on the line with us. He's the talent coordinator for the Comedy Store on Sunset Boulevard. Good evening, Tommy.
Hey, Sandy. How you doing?
Thanks for joining me tonight.
Thanks for having me.
So before we go on, we have a little breaking news for everyone, something we were talking about last night. But first, everyone, we have two Comedy Stores, one on Sunset and one in La Jolla.
Mm-hmm.
And Tommy's up at the Comedy Store on Sunset, and I'm at the Comedy Store in La Jolla.
Right.
It's the miracle of the Internet and the telephone. Anyway, okay. So we were talking about we have these theme shows, and there was these Iranian comedians.
Yeah.
One's from Pakistan.
You're talking about the Axis of Evil tour.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, the Axis of Evil tour features, well, there's three different. They've got one's Pakistanian, one's from Egypt, and one's from Iran.
So my mother, Missy Shore, is the owner of the Comedy Store, mm-hmm. but she puts together these theme shows. But what was so fascinating is, guess where they're going? Now, I did a little world search to find out where there is no comedy, and there is no comedy in the Middle East.
No, there's not.
There's no comedy clubs of any type.
Well, they would be skeptical to allow people to get together and do that type of thing, because a lot of comedy leads towards a slight cynicism towards the way things are run. And so they, in a way, have not been allowed to go. That's why, even trust me, these guys going over, they've been watched, they've been screened for their material and all this stuff, and it's been condoned by them before they're even booked there, you know?
So when are they leaving on this tour?
I think they left today.
Oh, great, because one of the comedians is Ahmed, and
yeah.
I'm definitely going to have him on the show when he comes back
yeah.
and find out what's going on over there. That's really kind of scary, going
it
over
is.
There. Now, where are they flying to exactly?
I don't know their exact itinerary. I know that, you know, MedAhmed.com, you can check on his website, and I believe there's actually an Axis of Evil tour website that shows their exact bookings.
And one of them is going to meet the president of, what did you say?
Sudan.
Okay.
The president of Sudan asked to meet with all three of them. They're going to many specific places, but one of the center places they're going to is Dubai. And that is a small, exotic vacation spot that is like a Middle Peace ground, almost, in a sense, for many people from the Middle East. They all go there on vacation, and it's beautiful and exotic and like something from another world there.
Isn't that the place they built the islands in the ocean?
Yep.
That's the place, right?
That's the place.
So they're then not in the middle of it, but getting there might be...
Yeah, they're going to be in a lot of different places. They're not actually... Now, remember, they're not going on a USO tour like any other comics coming out of America. They're going on a tour that's taking them into the heart of the Middle East and to places, to audiences who, and, you know, one of the things that we come to learn is English is taught to a lot of them over there. So a lot of them understand English.
Are they going to do their set in English?
Yeah, they have to. You know, I think Maz speaks Farsi. Is that what it's called?
I don't know.
I think so. I think that's what
we should learn with all the news. Okay, so we've got three guys from different areas of the Middle East.
Right. Aaron Cater from Pakistan, Ahmed from Egypt, and Maz Jobrani from Iran.
Okay, so are these countries... Okay, pardon me, I'm going to be really blonde. Are they all in conflict, or are they getting along, the countries?
Oh, they're all in slight bits of conflict, but yet, you know, the president of Iran right now is trying to bring unity to all of them. That's one of the things he's trying to do. He's trying to get them all pulled together. Because you have to go back in history, and here we are, we have all these different countries, but it's all Persia, okay? It's all Persia, which was a huge country for a world for a long time. So they're different countries, but they're brothers in a way, a lot of them over there.
This is really breaking news, because I don't know anybody that has the guts to go over there, personally.
Well, I mean, the USO tours do, but they do it in the confines of the military bases and stuff, you know. And we have many comics who have done that. Sean Pawlowski's been down there, Dave Meshevitz, Butch Bradley. They all have gone over and done tours over there. And Butch Bradley and Sean will both be down in La Jolla in different shows over the next couple months, you know.
Well, I hope they get a lot of pictures so I can post some of those pictures for them.
Definitely. Oh, they will. Yeah. Med will keep in touch with you about it, and it's a lot of fun. It's taking comedy to the world. It's very important. Comedy is, even though here we are, and you'll be having comics on talking on the air with you. Somehow you and I seem to get serious about it, but it is serious in the sense that people need it.
You know, I have on the show coming up later, I have John Hoke. He's a Nostradamus scholar. And it was really interesting because he said, in quote, in the future, comedy will be elevated to be seen as a spiritual virtue equal to our transcending prayer.
Wow.
Isn't that something? We're going to talk about that tonight.
Amazing.
Yeah, so we're on the right path here.
I think so.
And then just on the personal note, you went to the dentist yesterday.
Oh, yeah, I did. And I got my tooth pulled and a slight bridge put in there, and I'm not as much pain, and I feel much better. Thanks for asking, Sandy.
I think going to the dentist is important because the cavity doesn't go away.
No, not when they get to the point where mine got to. It was the tooth was done.
Yeah, well, you know, we all have that.
Yeah.
So, and anything else coming up? At the
just real quick about the show down there this weekend.
Okay,
I think it's real good. It's very modern. We have Sam Tripley's headlining. He's from Spike TV. He's at a half-hour Comedy Central special. He's on a thing called Young Americans Tour. It was like three or four comics to go around the United States and really showing, you know, a modern voice. But Sam's been developing with your mom in here since 98. So he's been in here for, 9 years. And,
wow,
and
okay.
He's just now in his early or mid-30s now. So he's really... He's got, he's the ability. And then Mike Faberman's middling for him. Mike is great. He's been in a lot of shows, but he also is a chef who has his own cooking show that's on,
I just have this MySpace. It's called My Comedy Workshop.
Yeah.
And he just became one of my friends.
Yeah. Mike's really fun. Mm-hmm. And then the two guys opening are two of the young guys that your mom's been developing in here for about 4 years, Ryan O'Neill and Jeff Danis. They're a writing team. They don't do comedy at the same time. They do separate sets, but they both have a real modern cleverness to them.
Mm-hmm.
And the last couple times we've had them down there in La Jolla, they got a real big following from the 21 to, say, 27-year-olds
mm-hmm.
who like where their minds are at. But yet they still have store quality because they developed in here. So it's a modern show, and I really like it.
Well, we need it down here.
Sure. I mean, I love comedy veteran shows. We have a couple good ones coming up this fall, too. But modern shows like this show you where comedy's headed.
We had the guy from Curb Your Enthusiasm here last weekend.
Jeff Garlin.
And he sold out all the shows.
Yeah, he did. He plays Joey's Jeff Green, Larry David's manager on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Mm-hmm. So we're, it's like a whole new generation. It seems like every 10 years is a new generation coming up. I have a big question for you before we get off.
Yeah.
How do you pick out talent? I know you're working with my mother very closely on it, but what do you look for? Because we have open mic and people go up there and come in from all over the country to try out. And, and if somebody wants
one thing is people can do it, okay? Go up and do it. And I know you encourage that, too, in your teaching. Just get on stage and do it, right? That's one thing. So if they're interested, they can do it. But how your mom looks for qualities in them that they can grow into. I look for people that are working at it and seem to be getting somewhere with their beats. It's one of those type of things. Being a stand-up comic is not individual to just a few people in the world. Many people can acquire the thing, but you have to dedicate yourself towards working towards it. And that takes
I always say don't tell jokes because anyone can tell jokes. And what I try to help people do is build a character.
Yeah.
Like not change a thing about themselves,
uh-huh.
but turn your everyday life into comedy.
That makes it interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It really does.
So Elsa's, kind of new on the scene here. I have her coming up. She's one of my students.
Cool.
And she does this piece that's so much fun. Let's get Elsa on the line. And this is great production stuff going on at PBS. Hello! Is Elsa on the line yet? Okay, Elsa's not on the line yet.
She'll get on there in just a second.
Yep.
This is getting better and better every week, Sandy. I mean, the conversation I'm enjoying with you and your guests are always fun, but the production value will continue to get better as you get it going.
Yeah. And then John Hogue's coming up in about 10 minutes.
Oh, that's great.
And I'm looking forward to that.
Cool.
Okay, so I guess I'm just going to, we're going to probably have to have some dead air because Elsa is
oh,
not
I'm
on.
Oh, I'm here. I'm here. I'm waiting.
Oh, you are
is.
There. Hey, Elsa. Say
How
hi to
you?
Tommy.
Hi, Tommy.
Hi, Elsa.
So can you talk a little louder?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Elsa's in San Diego also. Elsa has been doing comedy. Actually, you started like 10 years ago, but you're kind of coming back again.
Yeah, I had a rough time trying to get serious about comedy because I had a serious job. But
and you're, Elsa's from Venezuela originally, and she's also an architect. Isn't that great?
But I like to make people laugh better.
So the recent fires, the fires are all out.
Mm-hmm.
You came up with, you have our traffic report for us?
Yeah, I do. Do you want to hear about it now?
Yeah, I want to hear about the traffic report in San Diego. And by the way, you know, everyone knows San Diego's next to the border of Mexico.
Yeah, and we're full of,
that's
yeah.
Deleted. That's deleted.
All right, you want me to go?
Yeah.
Okay. Good evening. This is Lourdes Pacheco reporting live from Rancho Bernardo, bringing you the latest on the Witch Fire traffic report. I was just informed that the 15 freeway is now closed. Folks, the 15 freeway is closed all the way from Rancho Bernardo Road to Caminito Pasadero. As you can see behind me, traffic is totally jammed in this area. Residents have been stuck in their cars since early this morning. I am standing on Alborada Drive with Mr. Rodolfo Jose Ramirez, a resident of the area, and his wife, Ramona Antonieta Gutierrez de Ramirez. Buenas noches, señores Ramirez. ¿Desde cuándo están aquí? They were evacuated at 7 this morning. And 5 hours later, folks, they're still on Polvera Avenue, miles away from Pomerada Road. ¿Por qué no pueden salir? They're telling me that many streets in this area have been blocked by the fire department. Oh, yes, okay, yes. They're giving me the names of the streets that have been blocked so far. The streets are Camino Ramillete, Plaza Dolores, Camino Emparrado, Boca Raton, Tierra Vista Place, Corazon Place, and Camino Murillo. I've been told that only the fire department is allowed on these streets, folks, so stay away until further notice. This is Lourdes Pacheco reporting live.
Woohoo! Tommy, are you there? Oh, I guess Tommy left. So that's actually, there's. I think that the fact is everything here is named in Spanish. That's what's so funny.
Yeah, the all the streets is amazing in that area. Well, everywhere in San Diego, they're very Spanish.
Yes, everything is in Southern California.
Yeah.
So, well, this is your very first radio show, right?
Yes.
How does it feel?
It feels good. I love it. I like it. I was talking to, what's the name of the gentleman that called me?
Yeah.
We were talking about the radio and what he was doing and how you guys plan everything, and it's really interesting. I like it. Are you having fun tonight with your guests?
Yeah, we're just getting going. I've got John Ho coming up in a few minutes. He's a scholar and a world authority on Nostradamus. Are you familiar with Nostradamus?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I read a little about it when you sent me the link.
Yeah, you told me, I think the very, was it the first or second show I ever did? I did a thing on ghosts, and you said you hung up. I mean, you disconnected. You didn't want to hear about ghosts.
I got a little freaked out when I heard the lady talk.
Well, that's what this radio is all about. It's, you know, open topics.
And, yeah, it was kind of spooky, yeah.
Okay, so now it's official. All the fires are out in San Diego.
Yeah, yay!
The other day they said they still had a little left. They had like 5% left of one of the fires. But the cold weather has come in. It's like Seattle today.
Oh, God, yeah. That's so depressing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I like it.
But that really, that helps. I mean, that's going to help a lot.
Mm-hmm. So what's in comedy, where are you going to go now? I mean, what are you doing with your comedy?
Well, I'm trying to negotiate something with the comedy store in La Jolla so I can have maybe a night a month or something to have something like a special show where I bring three or four comedians with me and have a nice show. And also I'm checking out places down here. I know that there's a new comedy place in the Gas Lamp right now, and I'm going to check it out tomorrow. And there's other places, but I'm really interested in going to the Comedy Store because I started there. I mean, I feel like I never felt so comfortable in any stage, you know, compared to the way I feel it at the Comedy Store. It's just home
it's
to me.
It's got such a history. You know, everyone's been on that stage, like Robin Williams, Howie Mandel. I remember Howie Mandel, he used to go through women's purses, and then he would take the audience outside. He'd go across the street, have the whole audience standing on the sidewalk, and perform across the street.
Oh, my God.
That was, you know, some things I remember. And Jim Carrey, and that it's like the La Jolla Comedy Store is almost like a vacation place because we have a condo the comedians stay in on the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in the summer, it's a really nice place to go to. But we've been there since the late 70s.
And people die to go there and perform. I don't know what there's something about that stage, at least for me.
It's cozy. That's where I like teaching my workshops. I do all my workshops there.
It's great. It's a great feeling to be on that stage.
Mm-hmm. And my dogs are getting raised going there, too. Two new puppies.
They're stealing the show there. You're
yeah,
not an important
are.
Person anymore.
Well, speaking of show, we have a big dog show coming up. We're going into this Saturday.
Yeah.
I have two collies, everybody. And I'm having fun with them.
Big and very, very active collies.
Yes, they are. They're puppies. And you have a dog and
yeah. We're dog people.
And so what do you think of the comedy scene? So you think it's a really good place down here for people to sort of hone their skills and then maybe go up to L.A.? That's what a lot of people do.
Yeah, I remember Vicky told me many times to go to L.A. I haven't, since I lived in L.A. for so long, I really don't want to go back there to live or anything, but it would be nice to just go and try the different places.
Yeah, that's where it's all happening, not showbiz capital of the world.
Yeah.
So we have John Hogue. I hope you stay on and listen.
Yeah.
And Elsa, it's time to make a website for yourself or a MySpace page.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a MySpace page.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, so coming up in a minute here, we have John Hogue. Is John Hogue on the line yet? Seth? Okay. 3, 2, 1. Woohoo! Thank you very much, Elsa. So stay in touch with us and let us know what's going on with your comedy career. And on the line is John Hogue. Are you there yet, John? Okay. He is the author of 10 books. He's got 1 million in print in 17 languages. He's known as a world authority on Nostradamus. And I watched the History Channel last week. Did you guys see that? The Lost Book of Nostradamus. It was like this book they just happened to find. And I was really curious to get John's input on what he thought about that. And John's not on the line yet, so I'll just, you guys hang in there for a minute. If you check out his website, it's quite extensive. He also has these bulletins he sends out. They're like books in themselves. So, John, are you on the air yet?
Here I am.
Oh, there you are. Okay. So I gave your introduction already. You probably didn't hear it.
No, but I'm sure it was interesting.
You already know who you are.
Well, I don't know. Actually, I'm still in the search for that.
Now, you're located out in Pacific Northwest.
Yep, I'm at the other end of the West Coast.
And today we have Seattle weather in San Diego.
Well, unfortunately, we have Seattle weather here, too.
I just want to thank you so much for, you know, anyway, I was explaining to everybody, you know, the History Channel, the Lost Book of Nostradamus. I wanted to get your input on that. Everyone keeps talking about that 2012 and putting all the fear in us about the world's going to end, you know. I don't believe it for a second, but you, too, are also you prophesize yourself, and I wanted to get your, you know, your overview of the that show.
Yes, well, it all started with a call from the company in San Antonio, Texas, that had been contracted by the History Channel to do it, and apparently they're at the end of their production cycle, and they wanted me to come in and put my two cents into it, and I've been writing books since 1986, and what I looked at, what the material, I've known about this material for much in the 1990s. The material isn't that new. It was it surfaced in around 1994 in an Italian public library. It seems to be this book, which is mostly a regurgitation of some of Nostradamus's quatrains, four-line prophecies, set to a kind of tarot card-like pen and ink drawings, pastel, watercolor drawings. Now, the stuff that's there is actually a copy from no earlier than the 1700s. But when I took a look at it, if ever there was an image that the area, the time of Nostradamus is very famous for, was trying to pin a tail on a donkey of an obscure, open to interpretation symbology. This book was it.
Now, did you actually touch the book or see the book?
No, but I found it very funny in the show. There was this sort of striptease going on in the show where one moment you see a whole crowd of scholars bent over the book with expectant hands, rifling through it with gloved hands. One moment, naked hands. The next moment,
I saw that.
Gloved hands. And I thought, script girl.
So they did this whole show business thing and made us wait and wait through the whole show to finally tell us what the big secret was.
Yeah, and it was, and basically the big secret is what I call a Chicken Littleism. Chicken Little, the sky is falling and all of that, and there's a lot of that in the prophetic business. I've been in this for 30 years, but in my studies, in one of my books, the Millennium Book of Prophecy, as well as in Messiahs, looking at messianic prophecies, I showed how many times people have predicted the end of the world, and it hasn't happened. Actually, the Judeo-Christian tradition is the most kind of obsessed with end of the world, Chicken Littleism. And the funny thing is that everybody was all getting all excited when 2000 came, and there was also a book, a wonderfully imaginative, thought-provoking book written 25 years before May 5th, 2000, called May 5th, 2000, that was supposed to predict the tilting of the Earth's axis by 40 degrees in the year 2000 in May. And the man's name was Richard Noon. It is a fascinating book, but completely wrong. And so the night before the end of the world, according to Richard Noon, I said, well, I did a High Noon for the World show with Art Bell. And so we rifled through some quotes in there. One of the funnier quotes, I mean, the one thing that's nice about prophecy is there's another side of prophecy that other than the way to anal and serious fellow with the placards or way too long beard yelling, Jeremiah-ing and hectoring left and right. There's also the funny side of prophecy, which is when it's really wrong, you know, it can actually be quite funny. One of my favorite quotes in that book was a passage between two people in an interview talking about this back in 1975, 76, when the book came out, talking about this guy named Lester E. Brown, who apparently was some tomato farmer in Massachusetts who became a guy who created something called World Watch. And he was little known at that time. He was saying, I mean, this guy has no credibility. If I paraphrase it, they were saying, this guy believes by the year 2000 that the Earth's going to get warmer. Can you believe that? You know, it's going to actually, we know for sure, and this 500-page book is proving it, that actually the ice caps are going to get really big and force a tilt of the Earth in the year 2000.
You say prophecy works because we are predictable. So,
yeah,
I think that I think you're right on that one.
Well, the thing is that prophecy, there is an engine to prophecy, and that engine is a habit, or what I call the law of happenstance or happening, that human beings are born into the world, and then for all good reasons and a number of bad reasons, their parents, their priests, their pedagogues, and their politicians indoctrinate them with identity and with moralities and with spiritual ideas, which they are not actually encouraged to find for themselves, but to borrow from others.
That's true,
And in the end of that, if I can continue, in the end of that, by the time you're 20 years old, they've done a pretty good job of burying your real enlightenment and intelligence that you're born with, and it is that seeding of habitual limitation stuff that must be broken if the human race is going to survive. And I'm an optimist. I think the only time you can be in this business for 30 years and not jump off a building is to be an optimist, an incurable one.
Yeah, you say we need a new science of self-observation. Is this where you're leading to?
You must be psychic, yes.
Yeah, you're talking about, because we're all pounded down. You know, our free thinking is just kind of hammered down, and it's called, and most people right now are in survival mode.
Well, and it's not, and the problem is it's not just thinking. The problem is thought itself. That's one of the kind of givens that we're kind of programmed, spoon-fed with our baby's milk, that we are our thoughts. Descartes got it wrong, actually, I would say. I think, therefore, I'm not myself. Thinking is a utility that I use in this body mind that I am driving like a car throughout this strange life, but the thing that drives it is not the car. To put it in an automotive metaphor, which would probably be very understandable to a lot of people in Southern California, it's sort of a feeling that the society teaches us that we are the car, not we are the drivers of the car. That is, the car being our body, mind, our personality, our ego. We drive this, and then we visit this world, we use the vehicle, gets old and falls apart, and then we go get a new car, i.e. reincarnation.
Do you think
people
are getting a hold of that, they're getting a hold of themselves a little more these days as far as realizing that they can drive their own car instead of other people telling them which way to drive?
Because, well, the problem is people are still seeking a messianic mechanic.
Look how metaphoric we are. Ooh, a metaphor.
they're still looking for a mechanic to give them a holy loop job.
I have to switch the subject 1 second here.
Okay.
The Earth is going to end in what year? I wrote the year down. Said the sun's going to go supernova, right?
Yeah. Well, the sun's going to expand into a red giant and have its own stellar midlife crisis, I guess, and expand to the become overweight with its expelled hydrogen and build to a size, according to Nostradamus, in his preface to his prophecies, his history of the future, to expand to the size of the orbit of Earth. But Mars will continue its revolutions around this new sun. And he says that's going to happen around the year 3797 A.D. Now, what gets me laughing about this lost book of Nostradamus is how, with the big hype that Nostradamus saved his best prophecy for last, that was the litany all week on History Channel, and then the big payoff was they took one of the few prophecies of Nostradamus, undisputedly dated, no cryptic language, and they twisted it out of that piece of the prophecies and stuck it on 2012. One of the few times Nostradamus didn't give an astrological dating, but
so
came right out and said 3797 AD.
They should have prefaced the TV show with "for entertainment purposes only."
Yeah.
The Lost Book is that they should have put that under there. Doesn't it piss you off that he burned all his books? How many books does he have? I mean, actually real books in circulation.
If I had been there, I would have been pissed off, especially because I might have owned some of them. But since I wasn't there, it doesn't really bother me much. It's just an interesting story. The other thing, too, is it's something that was commonly done. I sometimes wonder, and as I say in my biography about him, Nostradamus, A Life in Myth, it could have been a maneuver, a statement made in public, in print, to mislead the Inquisition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was playing the game, telling his son in the preface where this famous prophecy comes from, that, well, you know, I've looked at these dark arts and they're not good for you, and when I realized what they were all about, I took them into my courtyard and or study and fed them into basically his alchemical stove, and these huge lights filled the whole house. Now, I mean, that sounds very interesting. I sometimes wonder skeptically if the inks of these old ancient scripts and books and bindings expelled wild colors from strange resins and all that, and made a very bright fire. But you know, it's like a lot of things with Nostradamus that could have been a feint to mislead the Inquisition.
How many books were saved? I mean, do you know?
No, we don't know any. The only books that exist in Nostradamus's life are the ones that he left behind.
How many are those?
Well, there's a number of, there's the Traites de Pharmacens, which is a treatise, Traité de Pharmacens, which is a treaty on pharmacists, which kind of describes some of his journeys around France and perhaps Italy and Spain, and it's about fruit preservatives and medicines and herbal cures. He was really quite an herbalist and a botanist, a kind of a proto-botanist. That's probably why he kind of got to be friends for a while for Julius Caesar Scaliger, who was a kind of the founder of modern botany. And that was, you know, his world in prophecy. We think of him as this old fuddy-duddy, just eating, living, and breathing prophecy, but it was just one of the things that he did in his life. Of course, it's the thing that has remained, as he predicted it would. And, you know, so his first book of prophecies was written in 1555, and it was actually a serialization of a plan to have 10 volumes of 100 four-line poems called quatrains. Now, in that process, he actually wrote a preface to it where this prediction that the Lost Book people raped out of that and used in their story to push 2012, which is completely erroneous. And then he wrote another longer dedication to the final three volumes, which came out in a separate book, to King Henry II of France. And that was that's a real wild stream of consciousness prophecy journey, because halfway through a sentence you're in the 17th century, and then you jump into the 20th, and then you go back into the 15th. And that's a pretty crazy piece of work, which brings to mind another, since this is a happy hour, one of the other funny things that goes on in the study of Nostradamus is all these people over time that have tried to cram Nostradamus up a conclusion that believes, like Da Vinci, he had a code to unravel all these wild verses and prose pieces mm-hmm. of his book, Le Prophète, which is what finally all of the serialization became one book. A few years after his death, it was put into one volume, and ever since we've been looking at his prophecies, since the Benoist Rigaud edition of 1568. Well, anyway, one of the things that I find very funny and entertaining is how almost annually, especially before the millennium, there was somebody putting out a book that said, we've decoded Nostradamus, and this is how you do it. I mean, one of the funniest books was one that said, we absolutely scientifically have decoded Nostradamus, but they don't give you the instructions in the beginning. It's in the appendix at the end. And then in the appendix, one of their scientific steps is to say, please believe us.
So basically, buyer beware.
Well, it's sort of like the other thing that was funny about a lot of these books is, I always challenge these people every time. I say, look, if you really decoded Nostradamus' prophecies, then I should expect at least an 85 to 90% accuracy rate if you give me 10 predictions for the next year. And you send them to me in a sealed envelope and send me a copy, and then a year from now, with witnesses, on video, we will open it up and see, and see just how accurate you were. But
you know what
happens in these books?
You brought up a really good subject about predictions, because you do them yourself. You prophesize. And I'm really interested because you have such a link to this mystical world that this is like part of it, you doing your own predictions. And isn't that within the context of your new book or some of your books? Do you prophesize? I haven't read your books.
Well,
so this latest book you have is Nostradamus, The War with Iran. Does that have anything to do with your predictions in there, or is it just Nostradamus, because it says Nostradamus?
Well, essentially, the book is about Nostradamus' prophecies, but an interpreter of Nostradamus, of course, is going to put in their insight into the subject. Just in brief, this book, which I rush wrote in spring so that it would be out there as a document, a record of interpretation, looks at several dozen prophecies where Nostradamus focuses a great importance on Persia and the attack of Persia by something called the true serpent, during a time when Turkey is involved, during a time when Mesopotamia is occupied by a Western crusading army, which, by the way, in all the crusades of the past, they never set foot in Mesopotamia, which is modern-day Iraq. Mm-hmm. Now, when all this is supposed to be happening, it gives astrological datings, which basically are aspects that are active right now as we speak, and on and off since 2003.
By the way, did you hear at the beginning of the show that three comedians are going over there to perform comedy? A Persian comic, what was that, an Iranian comic, and I forgot what the other one was.
Sounds like the start of a joke. There was an Iranian comic, a Persian comic.
No, I just think it's the connections right there. It's like they're going over there and meeting the president of Sudan, and they're going to do comedy right in the middle of it all, where they're going to that island thing out in the ocean. But anyway, I thought there's like connections going on here. But your 2007 predictions, you have your own. And basically, I was reading your website, which it's got so much information in there. You say you don't believe we've ever had a future. We recreate the past and call it the future.
Yes.
Does that coincide with your predictions? Because it is pretty, we're always at war. You know, and this is happy hour. We don't want to talk about blowing each other up, but, you know, I want people to really look at it and start, like, looking at it from a lighter point of view, because it's so ridiculous. All this war is so ridiculous. It's over land and resources. I mean, come on. Can't we all get along? That's an old saying. But
well, look who coined the famous phrase.
Yeah,
I mean...
What do you say for? Okay, you make some sort of predictions, right? You do make predictions.
What we're trying to do in a short amount of time is cover a lot of profound stuff and hopefully a little bit of funny stuff too, and it takes a little time to set up. And so the thing is that to get back again to what somebody like I do. Is I, as a scholar, believe that one must seek a balance between the objective study of prophecy and the subjective experience. And that means that that one who's going to interpret prophets should also experience the mediumistic experience of theurgy, of what Nostradamus did. That means one has to, in their own way, find a way to open themselves up to more subtle energies and higher powers, if you will, or what Nostradamus liked to call the divine emissaries of fire, angelic fire from the divine source, the Godhead. He basically melded Neoplatonist Greek oracle ideas with Jewish theurgy or God invoking mysticism. And I think my way is a little different from that, but similar in that I think it's important to have an experience of something and not just be, it's important not just to be somebody who knows every which way to say water. It's also important to dive in and get wet. Mm-hmm. And so that's how that's what I propose is what I'm trying to do with my work. And yes, in that process, I do make predictions and have over time, especially since the year 2000, inserted many more of my own predictions in books like 1000 for 2000, Startling Predictions for the New Millennium, and others. There are also a lot of funny predictions in there I put in.
Well, let's hear the funny ones.
Yeah, you know, like the end of sex.
Okay. Oh, I don't think that'll ever happen.
Yes, well.
I was going to say something. What do you see coming up?
On the end of sex? Well, not much, but no, sorry. I had to. What do I see coming next?
Ladies, are you single and available for the ladies listening?
Of course.
Okay, he's available. Okay.
I'm always available.
Okay.
Anyway.
We had to get that one.
Don't tell my girlfriend, though, that I said that, okay?
The what?
But,
The future.
The future, yes, that's what we're talking
about.
Well,
there's no such thing as the future. Do you agree with that?
What was that?
There's really no such thing as a future or the past. It's like right this second. We're never in the future and we're never in the past. It's weird.
Well, one thing for sure is we certainly try to moon about the past and obsess about the future. So, you know, it is often said by mystics like Osho and Krishnamurti and others that the eternity is in the very atomic moment, and that living moment to moment, bringing all of your energy, all of your intelligence, and all of your love into this moment, every moment, kind of being an effect of love and intelligence without a need for a cause, without the dependency and the slavery of cause. I mean, most people say, if somebody loves me, I'll be happy. I'm proposing to you from my study of prophecy that there are soon to come upon us a human race or an understanding even amongst ourselves that idea is upside down, that actually you are love, and who cares if you have a cause. In fact, causes come when you first just shine in that love. Then the causes come, then the lovers come, then good things are given and taken between two human beings. And there are a whole lot of prophecies that I have been for years in a few books I've managed to publish some of them. These prophets are rebels who have, they're all scattered through history. They, because they're documented and accurate, they've had to be tolerated by the mainstream interpreters of prophecy. But their take on the future is much more radical and much more fun than most of the mainstream blowhards that we all worship, like,
can you give me an example?
Hildegard of Bingen and others, and the biblical prophets and all of that. I probably upset somebody now calling them blowhards, but that's okay. People you wouldn't imagine as prophets, like George Gurdjieff, who lived in the turn of the century up till the middle 20th century, had so many accurate things to say. Or, like I say, Krishnamurti, or there have been hundreds of predictions, although he was not well known as a prophet, that there were hundreds of predictions from Osho, who was an Indian mystic, who I actually knew personally. since 1980. And these people, just an example, were what I call the prophets of the new man, the Homo Novus, which is this beautiful vision coming out of the crisis of our times of a human race that discovers a really fascinating and revolutionary concept, balance, harmony, the fact that seriousness is a dis-ease, that the fact that prayer and laughter do the same thing to you. They put you in the gap out of your mind and into something bigger than your little mind and your little car. Suddenly become the driver rather than the car.
That's what we're leading to. We're leading to, you say, in the future, comedy will be elevated to be seen as a spiritual virtue equal to or and transcending prayer.
Yes.
This is what you're talking about, right?
Yes. Comedy. Because, you know, what does comedy do? It throws you, it's like a Zen cone. It's a mystical thing. It throws you into a, you think you're going one way and then something happens. You're thrown into the gap. And in that gap, which a moment later is filled with laughter, in that gap is where all great mystics go. And so next time, all you people listening, who you watch a comedy show and somebody makes you laugh, be watchful of that gap, because you are entering, every time you're laughing, you are entering exactly the same space. Buddha entered exactly the same space Jesus entered when he was baptized, and so on and so forth.
I really think everything is, and I don't mean this in a sarcastic way, I think everything is pretty much a big joke and we take ourselves too seriously. It's like we've created the play we're in, and we're so hard on ourselves. We really need to lighten up, and through that we become enlightened human beings. I studied Buddhism for 19 years so I can attain my enlightenment. I never did. I finally realized it's all in what we believe. It's all in what we believe. End of story. 19 years of Buddhist practice, one sentence. There it is.
The thing
that's, you know, and then the fact that you put comedy, so you elevate comedy into this realm of, you know, of prayer. It was kind of brilliant, because I've never heard it put in that context before. So
well,
it's got me thinking now.
Well, the person that got me to think that was Osho. I used to sit and go to India and watch him talk, and he'd talk about all kinds of spiritual things and stuff, and then there'd be a pause and a rustle of paper, and then he'd say, there was a Frenchman, an Englishman, and a Jew. and he would just, like, do a joke, and he had this totally dry wit, deadpan way of doing jokes. It's kind of like a Bob Newhart of gurus.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of great teachers do.
Funny. He was so funny. And he used to start it by saying, after saying some deep thing, there'd be a pause, and he'd say, now it's time for prayer. And everybody laughed, because it means he was going to pull out a bunch of jokes again. He'd start telling often very off-color, ribald jokes, which is also funny, because you don't, you know, here's this Indian holy man in a white robe and long beard who's like classic, beautiful, radiant, saintly guy suddenly telling toilet jokes and with a complete deadpan.
When do you think people are going to catch on to this? Do you think it's going to take 100 years or 200 years? My book on Secrets to Stand-Up Success will be in the Library of Congress going, here's your way to enlightenment. Learn to put a comedy routine together and attain enlightenment. That's kind of how I feel about it.
Well, the thing is, it's a good question, but it may not be the right question to ask, as I see it, because it's been asked for thousands of years and by very sincere people, and it must not be the right question, because I often feel the right question gets us to the threshold of the state of answer, where there are no questions. Just answer. So it seems like there's this tug of war in us, like there's either questions, or there's pure answer.
Good point.
And so...
Or sometimes you just don't know.
So the thing is, the question I ask is not how long it's going to take, because that's actually taking us away from the place where it happens. That's going into the future. It happens right here, right now, this a thousand times this moment, and it happens the feeling of ecstasy in the moment of laughter is, if you get a knack for it, you can begin to live in that state, that gap, that bright gap, in all your day-to-day functions, waking,
absolutely,
sleeping. And one of the beautiful keys or paths to that is comedy, is
so
laughter.
Right. And you know what people don't know probably about you, unless they read your bio, that you have an entertainment background, that you used to do opera singing.
Yep.
Right?
That's right.
That is amazing.
I was an opera singer, and I also did musical comedy.
You did that, and then you decided that there was more in life, and you didn't want to deal with the politics of it, and neither do I. I don't like dealing with the politics of the show business. That's why I'm more into the healing aspects of comedy. And then you went off into this search, and then out came, you know, all these years later, out came 10 books and this, you know, amazing understanding on life, and you probably still have a zillion questions. You know, we have a surprise for everyone, right?
Yes.
You want to do it? John's going to... this is going to be really interesting because I've never heard you sing. So John's going to give us you. This is something you wrote.
Well, you see, I'm working on a little stand-up comedy idea.
I have to send you my book.
Hmm. Yes, I'm working on a little stand-up comedy idea where I've been to kind of have a little break from things. I take famous songs and change the lyrics. And so the song I will sing now, as our time is running short, is a shorter version. I might have done the Doomsday Christmas Carol, but you can all see that by going to HogueProphecy.com to the archives, and you'll see that one. But here we go.
All right.
This is sung to We Three Kings.
And thank you, everybody, for joining us tonight.
And here we go.
All right.
We three kings of Orient are getting drunk at Chelsea's bar. Drinking quickly, getting terrifically soused as we sit so far. Blah-da-ding. What a binge we're on tonight. Tell me who turned out the light. We are reeling, bladder squealing. Guide us to thy bathroom light.
Is that it?
Bravo, bravo,
encore. That's
take
great.
My song, please.
Now I've got to send you the comedy book and help you put a comedy set together, because you know I think that yes, it is a nice break from life. This has gone by really, really fast. We have about a minute left here, and I hope you come back on the show again.
Yes.
I hope my show keeps going. Next week, I'm bringing on James Gilliland. He's the guy that has that place at Trout Lake that does the UFO contact. And that's
uh-huh.
really fascinating. I'm curious to see what, you know, what's going on up there. But we could go on for hours and hours and hours. If you go to the bbs.com/happyhourradio, I've got a link to your website. And so they can see the book. Do you have? We have like 30 seconds. The War with Iran.
Yes.
That's the latest book.
Yes.
And we'll be talking to you again soon.
John yes.
Hogue,
and maybe some more song.
Yeah, let's go out with a song, and they'll just cut us off.
Okay. Dashing to get home, been working hard all day. O'er the roads we go, coughing all the way. Horns on big cars honk, making spirits bleak. Oh, what fun it is, get home and act just like a freak. Oh, jingle bells, Santa smells, and reindeers mess my roof. Oh, what fun it is to drink a bottle of 90 proof. Jingle bells, Santa smells, reindeers mess my roof. Oh, what fun it is to drink a bottle of 100 proof.
Woohoo! Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Thank you so much.
Merry Xmas.
Bye-bye.
Bye.